Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good Monday morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. First Monday of the month, that means we are going to talk a little bit about mortgages today, get caught up. Some things have changed along with everything else, but we're going to talk with Jabir Najeer, Rajan Mortgage, to see what's what. Good morning. How are you?
I am doing good. Thanks for having me again, Gretchen.
Thanks for always joining us and keeping us abreast of what's going on. So, if you did not refinance last year, is it too late?
It's not too late, but it depends on what the goals of refinancing may be. So, you know, a lot of times when people think about refinancing, they're thinking strictly to lower their rate from a higher rate to a lower rate to save money. And although there's still a lot of people who currently have rates above the current market and rates have actually increased quite a bit since the beginning of March, there could still be a lot of benefit. Recently, I've had a couple clients where we refinanced their mortgages to consolidate debt, especially a lot of people have actually taken on quite a bit of credit card debt, and sometimes they're not able to pay more than the minimum balance. So it's like that balance isn't going anywhere. You're paying on it for a lifetime and the balance stays the same. So in some cases, what we're able to do is refinance that debt. And even if the rate isn't lower than their current mortgage rate, mortgage interest rate, their overall monthly, you know, monthly payment obligations are actually lower than what they're paying before. So in some cases, we're still saving clients $300, $400, sometimes even $800 a month just off of consolidating debt. You know, the biggest thing I would probably say whenever we consolidate the debt is just to make sure you manage the finances correctly. Sometimes, you know, we have clients who just have the money's burning a hole in their pocket. So now they have actually $800 a month laying around that they didn't have before. And we have seen where people get into more, you know, financial issues, taking on additional debt. We've actually saved people quite a bit of money, and they went out and bought a car. So, you know, the biggest thing I would say is when you're refinancing and you're saving all that money, just be, you know, responsible, knowing that we don't know what the future holds for us, so we want to go ahead and make sure we're saving.
Now, if you decide to refinance, one question, what is there an advantage of ever doing like a longer-term mortgage? I know we talked about shorter terms and how to manage that and who that works for. But what about a 40-year mortgage? Who does that help?
So there's definitely benefit in doing so if you have financial strain on when it comes to your monthly obligations. So it actually would lower your monthly payment by having a longer term. So I think that, you know, and it's totally based on your preference, don't get me wrong, but if you're able to keep it to a 30 or below, I would suggest that only because it actually stretches out the amortization schedule quite a bit. You're paying more interest on the front end for a longer period of time. So you're seeing less go towards the principal. But if you're in a position where you really need to lower your monthly payment, then, you know, don't put yourself in a position where your property is going to be foreclosed on because you're trying to keep it at a 20-year or 30-year. If you had to go to a 40-year, then that may be the best thing to do.
Okay. Are the interest rates comparable when you do a 30 versus a 40 versus a 15? How does all that?
They're a little higher. Yeah, they're a little higher. Yes, but because you have a longer period, it's not that it's not as if you're increasing the interest rate, you know, a quarter point over a 30-year period. It's over 40 years, so you still see that difference, that drop in payment, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just the same thing. Like whenever you're at a 20-year or a 15-year versus a 30-year, the rates are lower. But even though the rates are lower, the payment is actually still higher on a 20-year as opposed to a 30-year. So the same concept applies whenever you're going, you know, looking at a 40-year versus a 30-year.
Okay. Let me ask you, you know, we were talking about the rates going up a little bit. How much does the political climate right now, especially with the war in Ukraine, how much does that play a role in terms of how the rates have changed or are changing?
It plays a big role. And the thing is that there's a lot of uncertainty in the market. And, you know, I've spent I'm not sure how many hours actually over the last month just taking the information from different analysts and reading. And really it breaks down to the market's really confused because we have the stuff going on, you know, between Ukraine and Russia. We have oil prices increasing. We have a strong economy that also has an inflation problem. So one day news may come out that your oil prices are dropping because the demand isn't as high as they believe it should be. Well, the oil price, the oil need for oil demand isn't as high as they believe it should be. But then it'll be followed by, and so you'll see, you know, rates kind of decrease a little bit. But literally the next day you'll hear that the talks between Ukraine and Russia aren't going so well and the rates increase again. So there's no consistency when it comes to the trend lines, when it comes to rates right now. I would say there's more days where rates go higher than lower, but we'll see rates go up for, you know, a week, and then we'll see a drop for 2-3 days. And then some news will come out, you know, overnight, and the next morning rates are going back up again. There's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of volatility in the market. I believe that my personal opinion this is that the market is being a little bit more conservative than it may have to be when it comes to even other things, when it comes to Fed rate hikes and the whole war situation. So even though I do agree that rates will be going or should have been going up in 2022, the rate at which they increased in March was a lot more aggressive than anybody could have imagined. In the beginning of March, and I know we're, you know, what's today, the 3rd or 4th here. So I know we're in April, but from, I would say, March 6th-ish, maybe 7th-ish, you know, we went from looking at rates around a 3.3 to the end of March, rates were in the mid-4s, even at one point hitting right around a 4.75 before it pulled back a little bit. So that's a huge increase within a couple weeks. So just imagine that you're talking to your mortgage advisor about purchasing a property, and, you know, we know that rates aren't going to stay the same forever, but usually they slowly increase or slowly decrease. So you're looking at a rate at, let's call it 3.25, and as you start to, you know, hone in on locking in a home, the rates are 4.5. That's in 2 weeks. That's like a ridiculous change within a short period of time.
Definitely. But, it, I mean, we are still, two points or something lower than we were a few years ago, 2019, correct? Weren't we in the sixes around that time, maybe some fives?
We're in the high five. Yeah, we're in the high five. So we're definitely lower than then. I don't believe we actually crossed all the way over into sixes. But definitely high fives. It wasn't uncommon to hear, you know, 5.75s, 5.875s. I don't recall actually crossing over into the sixth, except for some of the non-QM loan programs. We were hearing that. But, yeah, so we're still lower than then. I know initially analysts thought that we're going to hit, you know, high fours, 5% by the end of the year when we listened to analysts at the beginning of the year. And instead of it taking 12 months to get there, it took 90 days to get there. So I did read that the increase that we had by the end of March, from January to March, is the fastest increase in rates that we've had, a three-month increase in rates that we've had since 1994. So just to let everybody know that we're actually, you know, breaking rates when it comes to increasing rates, and not to scare anybody, but even though rates are, you know, not in the twos or, you know, maybe the days of the threes may be gone for now. You know, fours, I think we just got so conditioned to hearing, you know, 2.5, 2.75, some, you know, at one point we were quoting people in the low twos that we kind of felt like it was normal. But we had to remember that the reason why rates were actually held that low is because the feds were artificially holding the rates that low. They were buying up all these mortgage-backed securities, not to get too far in the depth in the on the back end of mortgages, because, you know, buyers and homeowners look at the front end, look at the interest rate that the bank gave them. But it's a whole back end side, it's like in the secondary market. So the feds are holding the rates low by cutting the Fed funds rate, and they're buying all these mortgage-backed securities and putting them on their balance sheet. So it's almost like, I guess the best analogy is like having a beach ball and holding it underwater. You know, we all know that the beach ball really wants to rise, but we're actually forcing the beach ball to stay underwater. Eventually our hands are going to get tired, and we're going to have to let the beach ball go and have to come back to the top of the surface. And that's pretty much what's happening right now. The Fed said, hey, we're going to stop buying mortgage-backed securities, and we're no longer going to keep the Fed's funds rate at, you know, the Fed funds interest rate at around zero. We have to let it naturally go to where the market thinks it should go. And that has caused rates to increase very sharply. Pretty sure it's, you know, it's faster than any, you know, even the Fed thought it would increase, but the market just quickly bounced to where it believes the rates should go. So if you're in the market now, I don't know, you know, hopefully everything calms down because we had a sharp increase in March. But if you were looking to purchase a home, not to discourage you, but it's something that you may want to go ahead and lock in now before the rates go even higher.
So what about reverse mortgages? I saw something recently about it might be a good time to do some reverse mortgages for those that qualify.
Yes, so when it comes to reverse mortgages, it is a very great tool to alleviate some of the stress that you may have to deal with when it comes to your monthly obligations. You get to be 62 to qualify for a reverse mortgage, but essentially with a reverse mortgage is it allows you to use equity in your home, has leverage to either not make mortgage payments, or you can actually get a line of credit against your home to actually help with some other living expenses. So
now,
it's very common
still,
that
some people do still make payments, though, right? During
yes,
while having a reverse mortgage.
Yes, you're
what's
absolutely
the reason
able to do that.
For that.
Yeah. So, with a reverse mortgage, the thing is that you no longer have to make mortgage payments. But if you're not making mortgage payments, you have to remember that the bank still wants to collect their interest. So let's just use $100,000. It's always an easy number to work with. If you have a $100,000 loan at 62, whenever you turn 82, the bank isn't going to still have a balance of $100,000. They want to, of course, because they've lent you this $100,000 for this new mortgage, they want to collect interest on their investment. Banks are in business. They lend money and they get a return on their investment. So even though you're not required to make the payments, sometimes certain people may not take the reverse mortgage because they're absolutely strapped for cash. They have no more money to spend. But they kind of have it as like a safety net, like it's there just in case you need it. So in the meantime, you could continue to make regular mortgage payments and pay down your mortgage if you have the funds to do so. But if things change, then you always know, okay, you have this reverse mortgage where either A, you don't have to make payments, or B, you could actually just tap into the equity of that line of credit on your home and use it to take care of other life emergencies that may pop up. Or sometimes you have investments in other areas and you say, you know what, instead of me pulling money from either 401k or the stock market or, you know, wherever else you may have money invested, I could actually take money from this reverse mortgage and not be burdened with the extra payment. We just let the equity in the property pay for this debt that you're actually taking out and worry about it
right
at a later time.
So now let me ask, you know, you would think that a reverse mortgage would be really great when the value of your home is up. When the value changes, you know, is there an issue in terms of what you owe? You know, do the terms of the reverse mortgage change at all?
Actually, no. So the great thing with the reverse mortgage is that once you sign to the terms, that's the terms. They're not going to all of a sudden turn around and say, hey, you have to start paying down the mortgage. The good thing with the reverse mortgage is that, well, there's two things. They actually calculate your life expectancy, and that's how they determine how much equity you need to have in your property or to qualify for the reverse mortgage. So if you are 62, you're going to have a lot more equity in your home than if you were, let's say, 92. The equity needed in your property if you're 92 is a lot less. So they do a pretty good job of calculating how much equity is needed so you don't run into that issue. But, of course, nobody has a crystal ball. Things could change and go in another direction very, very quickly. If you're ever in a position where you owe more on your home than what the home is worth, they cannot force you to actually start paying down the mortgage. But in addition to that, once a person is in a reverse mortgage, once they pass away, their family actually has the opportunity to take over the home. And I say take over, but purchase the home or finance the home in their name. And the good thing is that if that person, say they have a home that the balance is $500,000 on a home that's worth $400,000, then the family is only required to spend $400,000 to finance the home and take over the home and move the home into their name. So basically the reverse mortgage company will not sell you the home for any more than what it's worth.
So from what you know, approximately what percentage of homes that go into reverse mortgages, how many of them do end up in the hands of the family and how many end up, either maybe being sold before the term is up or either going back into the company, the bank or mortgage company as their property to dispose of?
So as far as percentage, I'm not really quite sure of the percentage that goes to the family members. But what I will say is that when it comes to the family, the bank will normally give the family 6 months to finance the home, and they'll actually grant an additional 6 months if needed. Of course, you have to request it, but if needed, they'll go ahead and grant an additional 6 months. After a year, if you cannot figure out how you're going to finance the home, the bank is saying, hey, we got to figure out something what to do. That's where they'll actually take over the home and go ahead and sell it. They're not looking to keep the home. The bank isn't in the business of taking over homes to own property. They really want to get their investment back. And after a year of the other person passing away, they figure, okay, if you weren't able to figure it out by now, then it's probably not going to happen. Now, one thing I will say is that there are cases where somebody may move in with a family member who has a reverse mortgage. And we have seen where they believe that, okay, my mother, my grandmother, or whoever the family member is, wasn't paying a mortgage, I shouldn't have to pay a mortgage either. But it's very important to understand that the reverse mortgage isn't I qualify for reverse mortgage, so yes, you may owe $200,000 on the home. If I own $200,000 on a home when I'm 62 and I can qualify for reverse mortgage, this isn't the right to for my family members to eventually own the home without ever paying back that $200,000. So whoever lives in the home, and keep in mind, all members that are on the mortgage have to be 62 or above. So if one person is 62, but another person is 50, then they won't be able to qualify for the reverse mortgage because the other person cannot be in the mortgage. Once that person passes on, then you have to keep in mind that you didn't qualify for the mortgage, so the bank wants their money back, and they're going to give you the opportunity to figure out how you're going to get the money back to them, but you don't continue to live in the home, you know, for free, for forever. It's not your reverse mortgage. But those
right.
6 months do go by pretty quickly. Once you're taking care of business, I understand you have to take care of the loved one that passed away. There's a lot of loose ends and, you know, business has to be tied up. But one of the biggest things is the mortgage, and those 6 months will pass by pretty quickly. So, you know, my advice is to start working on the financing pretty much right away to make sure you don't run into an issue. And a lot of times the other family members may have income issues, credit issues, which won't allow them to finance the property, which, of course, you know, at that point you could always sell the property. You know, if that member that passed away had, you know, $100,000, $200,000 in equity, that doesn't belong to the bank unless you pretty much give it away to the bank. What I mean give it away to the bank is you just decide that you're not going to move forward with, you know, trying to sell the property or finance the property. And essentially at that point, you're just basically giving away the bank, like, here, I didn't want to deal with it. Here goes, you can have the $100,000 in equity because you don't want to deal with it. So, you know, the best thing is, as I just mentioned, just to go ahead and start attacking it right away to take care
right.
of business.
So even if you, for example, left something to a child, or an adult child, let's say, you know, that adult child still, even though it was left to you in a will per se, there's still the mortgage obligation that has to be met, and so you have to either decide whether to refinance it, I guess, in a way, or to sell the property in order to make sure that the lien holder has their money, you know, since that person is no longer there, correct?
100%. Just like a forward mortgage, if you have a regular 30-year fixed mortgage, say that, your family member bought the home, just thrown out a number, $300,000, they paid it down to $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
The home was worth $500,000 now. If they pass away, you don't just get the house, you don't have to worry about the $150,000, you have to pay the bank off their $150,000. And it's the same thing when it comes to reverse mortgage. There's no difference. If you owe $150,000 on a reverse mortgage or $150,000 on a forward mortgage, you have to take care of that debt. The debt doesn't automatically go away. But we do see sometimes because they have reverse mortgage and their family member wasn't paying a mortgage, they're like, oh, I don't have to pay a mortgage either, which is not the case. There is a balance on that home. It has to be paid.
Okay.
Now,
one thing
to keep in mind – oh, go ahead.
Yes. No, go ahead, please.
Well, I was going to really quickly say that one thing to keep in mind is that you can actually purchase a home with a reverse mortgage. So say that, you know, you want to purchase a home and you have, you know, depending on your age, let's just throw 40% down because the younger you are, the more you have to put down. You could actually put the 40% down, the 35% down, and get a reverse mortgage on a purchase. So that's also another thing to keep in mind. Just an FYI out there for anybody.
So now, the reverse mortgage is on a primary home. So let's say someone's moving into Florida from somewhere else, and they have a home there. Now, if they keep, I guess, the home where they left, they have to come up with the money to do at least half of what the mortgage is going to be for the new home, correct?
Right.
Okay.
You're asking in regards to the down payment, right?
Right. Or, right. But also, too, is there any way to do like a I guess I want to say if they decide to sell the property that they were in, to do some sort of like transfer of funds or whatever, so that once the home sells out of state, that those funds could be used to put toward that home purchase of the new home with the reverse mortgage?
So you wouldn't be able to get a reverse mortgage under the assumption that the other home would be sold off. There has to be another way to bridge it. So you would have to borrow funds. But to my knowledge, no. There's really nothing that would necessarily guarantee that, because if that person didn't sell the home, now you have a reverse mortgage that, you know, didn't have the correct down payment. So I'm sure you could probably find a way to use like a bridge.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, so it's not necessary that the lender would say, okay, you're going to sell another home, but there are bridge loans that will allow you to get the funds needed for the down payment on the new home with the assumption that, or with the understanding that you have the other home under contract or on the market. So that is one way to do it, but it's not necessarily that you have another loan, another home that you're selling, so the new mortgage is automatically going to qualify you under the assumption you're going to use that money. The bridge loan would bridge the sale of your current property by providing the funds for the down payment for the new reverse mortgage.
Okay. All right. Well, I did want to get that in there. And so we're going to take our break. We kind of blew past it, but we're going to take our break right now. We're here with Jabir Najeer of Rajan Mortgage. This is Mortgage Monday on G's Power Hour. The number, if you have a question for Jabir, is 516-387-1944. That's 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back. Does it appear the long arm of the law is working against you instead of for you? Whom do you call when the boys in blue are pursuing you? When the wrong person behind bars may end up being you? With over 40 years combined legal expertise, Anderson & Welch bring to bear a smart, sound, sensible defense of those caught in what may be the unrelenting grip of the legal system. Turn to Anderson & Welch first to get ahead of trouble, not fall into it, by calling 561-832-3386. That's 561-832-3386. That's Anderson & Welch Law Firm online at andersonandwelch.com. Hey there, welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. The number, if you want to ask a question of Jabir Najeer from Rajan Mortgage, is 516-387-1944. So, fears are that, I want to go back to the mortgage rates, fears are that we may be seeing 5%. In some cases, before the end of the year, is that possible, you think? Probable?
Definitely possible. Definitely possible and probable. I would actually say that, you know, we'll have to see what happens over the summer, because at the rate that everything is going, it shows that we'd actually reach it faster than the end of the year, probably summer or maybe even in the next 30, 60 days. But, you know, I feel as if the other part of it is everything going on, you know, with the initial increase, the Fed rate hikes. So I think that the market just has to get used to, you know, the Fed rate hikes. And we'll touch on that again in a second. But, you know, everything going on with the war in Ukraine, we don't really know when that's going to end and when everything will, you know, be settled out. But that could also cause the rate to decrease, and hopefully as oil supplies increase or the demand for oil decreases, maybe that will also calm the rates down as well. So there's so much that actually goes into it. But speaking in regards to the Fed rate hikes, we did have the first rate hike on, I think that's March 16th or March 17th, And then the next Fed rate hike is scheduled for May 5th. And the Feds have already said that, you know, they're looking at anywhere between 7 to 8 rate hikes in 2022. And in total between 2022 and 2023, 11 rate hikes are looking into. So the first rate hike was 0.25%. And keep in mind that this is just the rate, the overnight rate that banks borrow money from each other. But that typically, you know, bleeds out into all other areas of finance. So, you know, sometimes you hear of a rate hike and it doesn't really make a big difference when it comes to, you know, consumer borrowing. But there are cases like this time where the whole market just overreacted, in my opinion, because yes, should there be an increase in rates? Did the Fed increase rates? Yes. But the rate at which we saw increase, it was very, very aggressive. And, you know, even the analysts, you know, I probably watch every single analyst on every channel out there or, you know, YouTube video and everything. And in the middle of March, they couldn't even figure it out. And these are people who have been doing this for 20, 30, sometimes even longer years. And they knew it was coming, but not at the pace that it was coming. So my hope is that the market says, hey, you know what, we overreacted in March. So let's bring it back down a little bit. And instead of taking this steep increase to rates, maybe we could bring it down that the increase is not as sharp. It's a little bit more of a not so aggressive increase. But nobody has a crystal ball. That's just my assumption and my hope that we could get back on the original path to increase, you know, what they estimated, you know, the projection for increased rates then, which I think was something that the market can handle, which was a slow increase to rates over the course of 2022. But this sharp increase, you know, if it continued this path, we would be at like 6%, really, not 5%. We'd blow past the 5% for sure.
Wow. Ah, geez. So now, how are you seeing this reflected in terms of the amount of mortgages that you're dealing with now, in terms of the amount of applications? You know, and there's just so many different things going on right now. The supply is still relatively questionable. You know, I know they are building a lot of new houses, but, you know, as everything is going up, you know, whether it's, you know, rates, whether it's, you know, materials or whatever the case may be, you know, that's got to be having some sort of impact, right?
Yes, definitely. So the thing is that they still expect prices to even increase still with these rates increasing, only because we have people that have to find a home to live. And, you know, depending on where you are in Florida or even in the country, rates are actually increasing quite a bit as well. Some areas as low as 20% and some areas as high as 40%. I even heard recently from a friend that their landlord doubled the rent to a point that he couldn't afford it. And basically when it came to renewal, they doubled the rent. So depending on where you're at, sometimes it's, you know, in Florida, it's still cheaper, even with the higher rates, to go ahead and purchase a home. So there are families that are going to purchase anyway, just because that's just going to be the best option to secure, you know, a place to live. And they know what their payments are going to be, and they could kind of work around that. But applications, there's still applications coming in that people are looking to get pre-qualified. The thing is that because there's an increase in the rates, the amount that they could qualify for is lower. And now when they start to go out into the market, they're finding that based on what they could qualify for now, there's just nothing out there. So that's another challenge that they're dealing with, is like, okay, I got pre-qualified. Initially, you know, literally 30 days ago, I could qualify for, you know, X amount more, sometimes $100,000 more, sometimes it's $50,000 more. That $50,000 makes a big difference in the type of home that they are looking for. But now the payments are higher, so they can't afford it. So, you know, somebody may have a certain budget, and if that same house is now going to cost them $400 more a month, depending on your family structure and your expenses, especially those who have kids, that $400 is just something that's, you know, they just can't afford.
It's kind of a tough time right now all the way around. So what
and it
do you
changed
advise...
so quickly. That's a crazy thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I was going to ask you, what are you advising folks, especially first-time homebuyers? But, I mean, like you said, it's really hard right now to make any type of real prediction, you know, to say, you know, well, you know, I'd go ahead and do it now, or I'd go ahead and I would just wait and get stuff together, because you don't know where things are. Oh, one of the things I was going to ask you, too, you know, when I guess it's a shame. It seems like it was just yesterday, but it was 2020. I guess when they were doing a lot of those forbearances and stuff because of COVID. So what are you seeing now with that? Have people been able to, you know, catch back up with those? Have they had to make other arrangements? What have you seen?
So I have seen a couple of things. I've seen some modifications where people are able to get modifications, and quite a large percent of their loan was put on the back end. So they're able to keep their payments within the same range of where they were paying before. But instead of them having whatever their balance initially was before to have that payment, now they are still making payments on that certain amount, but now they may have a $20,000, I've even seen $50,000 silent mortgage that they have to worry about whether it's 15 or 20 years from now. So that's the way the banks are able to get around, you know, not, you know, the foreclosure process on those clients. But there are cases where based on the client's decrease in income, the bank is saying, listen, there's no way that we could bring the payment down to this level based on this balance. The balance is just too high to have a payment that low. So for those people, they would actually have to sell the home. And I don't really think that we're going to, even though there was an uptick, I didn't check the numbers for March, which I guess they wouldn't come out yet because March, you know, we just got out of March. But I know there was an increase. If I remember correctly, I think it was around 28% in January, but it decreased from January to February. But because of the increase in the appreciation in homes over the last 18 months, I don't think that we would actually, for those families that are still having a hard time, we're going to see a huge spike in foreclosures. Will foreclosures go up? Yes, I do believe it'll go up. But I don't think the big spike that people were talking about before is going to come, mainly because people have a lot of equity in their home. If you owe, let's just call it $300,000. Say you owe $300,000 on a home that's now worth $500,000 and you can no longer afford the mortgage on the $300,000, there's really no reason to go into foreclosure. You just put the property up for sale and you get a check for $200,000 minus, you know, the realtor fees and closing fees, and you find a different way that you're going to, you know, a different way to find housing for yourself. But there's so much equity in a lot of properties that they just have to sell the property. They don't have to go through a foreclosure process. So that's why I think that we're not going to see that big uptick. So people are having to move and find other means of finding, you know, finding shelter. So that's what I've personally seen is, you know, those who either had a modification or those who are just selling just because they can no longer afford it.
Modification is a word I haven't heard in a while, so I was wondering if it was still happening. But, you know, it's a good thing that it is. And then are you seeing more of any type of one particular type of loan than another? Are you seeing more FHA, more conventional? Are you seeing – what about reno loans also? What are you seeing?
So I'm going to hold on to that question. But one thing I want to quickly touch on when it comes to the modification is just be aware of what the details in the modification may be. A lot of times homeowners are just so happy to have a modification at a certain payment that they don't really look at the details. And I had a client – recently within the last month that came to refinance, but whenever I looked, when we order a payoff, they actually owed quite a bit more than the balance in the mortgage statement. That's because of that silent mortgage. So there was no way for me to refinance them at a lower payment because they have another large amount that was placed on the back that now we have to pay. So even if the rate was lower, the overall payment was going to be higher because of the larger balance. So it just wasn't worth it. And whenever I first spoke to them about it, it's like, no, they were trying to convince me they owe a certain dollar amount. And I explained to them the payoff that we ordered was much higher, and then they reached out to their mortgage company and got the details, and they had no idea what they signed. Unfortunately, it's fine. They've been in that mortgage for a while. There's no way to turn it around. But it's one of those things that it is what it is at that point, and it's just best for them to continue with the modification, which wasn't a bad deal. So it's not like they got put in a bad position. They just couldn't take advantage of a better position they thought they could be in because of their current situation that they didn't quite understand where they currently were in. So just an FYI, if you haven't modified your home yet and that's an option that you're looking into, just be aware of what the details are so you're not caught, 2 years later and just finding out the details. So it's a little important part there. But when it comes to the type of loans, FHA is probably still one of the biggest, and the biggest for two reasons. Number one, FHA allows you to go to a higher debt-to-income ratio, so people are having to go to a higher DTI to qualify for these loans. And FHA does have a lot more leniency when it comes to credit as well. So if you have a couple dings here and there, FHA tends to be the best way to go. But mm-hmm. we also have the 100% financing for the FHA loans, which we don't have for conventional. Now, FHA is not actually financing 100% of the purchase price.
Please clarify that. Every time someone mentions 100% financing, we have to kind of clarify that because people are thinking that, I don't have to bring anything to the table. It's like, no. That's not the way that happens.
Yeah, not the way it's happening at all. So it's 96.5% of the purchase price, but we have our own down payment assistance, which will actually finance the other 3.5% for you. So that's financing 100% of the purchase price. Now, the very, very important thing to keep in mind, which a lot of times people still skip over this when I mention it to them, is that that doesn't include the closing cost. That just means that if you're buying a house for $100,000, though I know that $100,000 is not possible anymore, but just using $100,000, is that we will get you financing for the $100,000. But there are closing costs. There's title fees. There's government transfer fees. There's underwriting fees. That stuff is not included in that $100,000. That's just we're going to get you financing for the $100,000. So what people had, 3.5% to put down, and they're asking the seller to pay closing costs, sellers are no longer paying closing costs. Or if you do get a seller to pay closing costs, you're just a very, very lucky person. It's not the norm anymore. So now they're using that same 3.5% to pay their closing costs. That way they don't have to come up with their 3.5% for closing for down payment and closing costs. They could just come up with just the money for closing costs. Now, what we will do later on in the future, whether it's 6 months or a year down the line, is refinance everything into a lower payment because the other second mortgage is not a for the 3.5%, it's not a free, 3.5%. It is a 10-year loan. So what we'll do is refinance them 6 months later into a lower interest rate loan. And I know rates are increasing, but I'm just speaking in today's terms. So I don't know where rates are going to go for sure in the future. We do know that there is upward pressure to increase the rates. So keep in mind that this, what I'm saying, is just based on today's rates, but it may not apply because rates are increasing. But what we are doing is that 10-year note that they have, we're just refinancing into one loan. That way they're paying an overall lower monthly mortgage payment. So that is, for those who are trying to find a way to get into a home, but they may be strapped for cash when it comes to the down payment and closing costs, that's the method that we're using to get them into the homes.
Okay, we're going to take our final break. We are here with Jabir Najer of Rajan Mortgage. This is Mortgage Monday on G's Power Hour, and if you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time, and you need to plan a wake or repast. let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are here with Jabir Najir of Ryajan Mortgage. And if you have a question on this Mortgage Monday, the number is 516-387-1944. By the way, yes, we were supposed to have had our economist, Paul Z. Shelton, on for Friday, and we did not do that, but we will have him on this coming Wednesday to talk about what's going on with jobs and some other segments of the economy. So don't forget to join us Wednesday. Paul will be on at that time. But anyway, so now I had a question too. If you have someone that is let's say you're moving. You're moving to a different state or a different area of your state or whatever. Is there a best way of trying to determine who I get to help me finance my new property in the new area where I, because I don't know anyone, you know, I don't know. Are there ways to try to determine the best route to take in terms of financing for a new property?
Well, it depends. If you already have a realtor you're working with, then normally the realtor should have some people to recommend. Then if you want to do your own research, I know there's certain companies like I think it's UWMR or Rocket Mortgage that has findamortgagebroker.com. So a lot of us who are that does business with them, they have us in a sense of a database that you can actually do your research and, you know, find out who you'd like to use. And then just anybody within the local community that, you know, if you know people within the local community that, especially if they just recently purchased a home, just to find out who they use and, you know, if they did a good job and you could reach out that way. So that probably be some of the best ways. And then a lot of times if you just start searching for mortgage brokers within a certain area, depend just based on the way the algorithm works, if you're on social media at all, those mortgage brokers will end up popping up, assuming that they're doing online advertising, social media marketing.
What kind of questions should you be asking to determine? Because, you know, I'm assuming that you're not just going to be one and done in terms of picking the person that you're going to have to finance your home. What kind of questions should someone be asking when they're trying to determine who to go with?
Well, you want to find out the different type of program that they offer. You know, there are a lot of banks / mortgage brokers who may be limited in the type of program they offer, or they may be strictly, you know, conventional and FHA, which are pretty much the programs that everybody offers. But you want to make sure they have alternative financing options, because sometimes you may not qualify for FHA conventional loan, but you could qualify for one of the non-conventional loan programs, or what they call non-QM. And it's probably some of the more common clients for that, not say strictly in, you know, written in stone, but are those who are self-employed. So you definitely want to make sure they have alternative options when it comes to programs. You want to check on rates and points. The thing is that sometimes you may hear this lower rate than what's quoted out in the market, but they may not tell you that that may cost you 3 points up front. So, or 2 points, let's just say 2 points. So that's, you know, a number that, you know, you hear a lot. So if you're purchasing a home for $400,000, that means that that lower rate that you really like is going to cost you $8,000 more than the person who quoted you a higher rate. And that's just because that higher rate is what you may have actually been called what they call your par rate. And every lender is able to offer you a lower rate than what you naturally qualify for, as long as you're willing to pay more upfront. So you just want to check out not only what the rates are, but how many points do they offer, and are they charging you? And just kind of get an idea for their experience and, you know, how well they know the market. I had a client or somebody who was referred to me, and unfortunately they referred to me too late. So they were just too far in the contract that I couldn't help them. It was like one of those on the 12th hour type referrals. But basically they were dealing with somebody who was out of state. The broker that they were licensed with, was licensed in Florida, but I think they may have been in like Michigan or something like that. So they had no idea the Florida market. So when they initially pre-qualified them, they pre-qualified them with not only lower taxes, but the insurance was way below what insurance would have been for the area they're purchasing in. So once they actually found a home, for whatever reason, they waited till the end to search for insurance, and the insurance was a lot higher than what they estimated when they put together the pre-qualification or the pre-approval, and they could no longer qualify. Now, anybody from that area or who's familiar with the Florida market would know that the insurance that they're looking at, because it was in a coastal city, they would know that at the bare minimum they should have quoted insurance a minimum of $1,000 higher, maybe even more, and that really threw it off. So you just want to make sure that they're experienced in that area and not somebody who's from California, for example, that just happens to be licensed in Florida.
So now, oh gosh, I lost my train of thought. Sorry about that. So anyway, I also wanted to ask, changing gears a little bit, what about people that may be interested in getting into the mortgage business? Is there a particular process that they should go through, and is this a good time to get into that business, or is it oversaturated?
Maybe oversaturated and a little challenging during these times.
Okay.
I think that we are stepping into a transition into a new era of just real estate in general. So,
yeah. As we have a lot of people going into real estate as well.
Yeah. So it depends on, you know, if they're going to be patient to say, you know, I'm going to go through the steps to become a mortgage broker. You understand that it may be a little challenging during these times, but it will eventually, you know, become better once the market kind of figures out what direction it's going in. So I think that 2022 in general is kind of a what direction we're going to go in period. But becoming a mortgage broker is definitely a very good career. As long as you're not looking at something to do for the next 6 months, then this may not be the route that you want to take. But to kind of quickly go on what you need to do in order to become a broker, the first thing you want to do is just go to the NMLS system, and you can basically go to NMLS. It's actually a state mortgage registry, but it's the National Mortgage License system, and register for an individual NMLS ID. And then you want to start going through the pre-licensing education. You really need an ID first, because that's everything when it comes to the license is attached to your license, your ID. When it comes to your education, when it comes to your state license, because you're federally, you get to become federally licensed and then licensed in each state. So there is 20 hours of mortgage education that you have to take, and then you have to go through the background test, a credit test, credit check. Now, one thing to quickly mention on the credit check is that you don't have to have perfect credit. What they're really looking for is if there's anything going on that you would possibly put other people's information at jeopardy for, you know. So if you had a bankruptcy 2 years ago, that's totally fine. They're gonna want to know what happened that caused you to go into the bankruptcy and make sure you've overcome that challenge. So I know a lot of times people, you know, get kind of thrown off by, oh, I have to have my credit checked. You don't have to have perfect credit. Trust me. I've seen many people who got approved and they're in the 500, so you'll be fine. As long as, you know, you have a reason for this situation that put you in that situation, you'll be fine. Then after that, you have to go through and apply for each state that you like to get licensed in. So if you're in Florida, the best thing I could tell you is to just get licensed in Florida to start off. Maybe if you have some contacts in other neighboring states or other states, maybe you may want to look at that after that. But the first thing you want to do is just, you know, start to get licensed in the state that you would like. And then you want to find a company to work under. There are a lot of companies that will allow you to just sign up and start working for them, but they don't offer any type of support. So you want to make sure you start off with a company that offers some type of support to really teach you the business. If you find that after a year or two you outgrow that company, then maybe you look at another company that may not offer as much support, but, you know, may offer you a better deal when it comes to, you know, bringing business to them. But definitely starting out with a company that's going to offer you support and offer you leads to help you build your business. If you start with a company that's going to give you a high split, something like that, you're probably not going to be in the business for more than a couple months because you're a licensed broker and you just don't know what direction to head in. But those would probably be the basic steps. And then just know that you're going to have to go through the process of, for everybody it's different. Some people pick up on it right away based on their connections, and 3-4 months later they're off to the races. And then for some people, it may take them 6 months to even a year to really get their business going. But you know, you just, one of the things you have to really stick with it, study the program, study the game of mortgages really. And you know, the longer you're in it, the more you learn, and hopefully you have a successful career.
How do
and of
we
course,
reach
if you ever
out
have questions,
you?
Always just give me a call.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do we reach out to you in case we have questions?
Yeah, so whether it's for just purchasing, refinancing, or if you're looking to get into the business, you can always reach out to me by email at Jaber, J-A-B as in boy, I-R, at Riajan, R-I-A-J-A-N.com, or just give me a call. I'll give you my cell, 321-239-5814. Once again, that's 321-239-5814. Give me a call, shoot me a text, and, you know, I'll do my best to answer any questions that you may have.
Okie doke. Jaber, again, I've had you talk a lot today, but we appreciate all the information. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. You take care.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for you all listening today. Talk to you tomorrow. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Be well, be safe, be blessed. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.